Welcome in. 806 on FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings. I'm Dalton Orwig, joined in studio by the one and only Jeff Poor from The Jeff Poor Show on WVNN in Huntsville. Also writes for, well, Lanyap, Breitbart, YellowhammerNews.com. Did I miss anything there?
I think you nailed it.
Yeah, that's all of them. And a good friend of the station. And always love talking politics and news with Jeff. And we'll get into that in a minute. Do want to remind you, we will be on the road quite a bit for the rest of this week here at FM Talk 106.5. Today at noon, live from the fantail of the USS Alabama. And Jeff, you recently did your show from USS Alabama. You weren't in a van, but you were... Where'd you record? Where'd you broadcast from?
Probably the same place you put your van at, but we did it on a table with some chairs. And you know, it was a little windy. That was the only thing about it. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, really.
Setting.
And that's kind of your goal, right, is to broadcast from some of the coolest places around Alabama, chance you get.
That's the goal. You know, obviously, with the holidays, kind of... put that in the back seat, but I got to broadcast from Jordan-Hare Stadium
in
the press box the day before the Iron Bowl, and you know, there's not a whole lot going on in the stadium the day before the Iron Bowl, but you know, they're striping the field and there's people doing tours and they're testing the sound systems and the big screen, so it's kind of cool. And then you go that next day to the game, like, yeah.
And you know what that means. I don't know if you're a superstitious guy, but Jeff in here wearing the War Eagle hat. Auburn, of course, won the game. So every Iron Bowl that's played at Jordan-Hare Stadium looks like you've got to broadcast live from the press box before the game now.
Don't know if they'll let me do that, but it would sure be nice if they would. I wonder what would happen if I broadcasted the day before from Bryant-Denny Stadium.
You might have to do it in secret. I don't know if they would let you in there, especially if you're wearing that hat.
Go call on the phone.
Also, tomorrow, we're heading over to Fairhope Brewing Company. They do this every year, the 12 Bartenders of Christmas, and we are launching the event this year. Tomorrow night, the FM Talk 106.5 crew bartending for charity will be there from 5 till 7 as bartenders. We'll hang out afterwards as well. But let Kelly, Sean, myself, pour you one up. The tips and donations go to Wilmer Hall Children's Home for our charity night, but 11 more nights of bartenders after us. And I've got the schedule there on our Facebook page and the different charity bartenders that will be coming through, but that's tomorrow night, 5 to 7. And then on Friday, Midday Mobile Live from noon to 2 at your CBD store of West Mobile on Hillcrest Road, right near Grelot Road across from Waffle House. They're having a Christmas open house, and the store owner, Joe Brown, he said he'll be giving away a CBD SunMed relief bundle valued at over $240 to one lucky person that comes out to the remote. Come on out to your CBD store of West Mobile on Friday. Well, lots of news to get into, both in the state and nationwide, Jeff, and probably the biggest news in state politics. I would say, you can correct me if it's not the biggest news in state politics, but earlier this week, John Merrill dropping out of the U.S. Senate race, and in his statement where he was dropping out, he mentions Jeff Sessions jumping in the race really changed things for his campaign.
I think that's absolutely true. There's no question about that. We started to get a word about it on Sunday afternoon. I was driving home from Auburn, from the game, and started getting some text messages and reached out to him, and you know, it was we're going to make the announcement officially later tonight at 8 p.m. And then once we got that out, you know, you kind of go back and you do the autopsy. It was a campaign. You know, if you've never met Secretary of State Merrill, he's a good politician, but it kind of shows the difference in what politics is now, especially at that level, because you've got to raise money, I think, and you've got to have an infrastructure, and you can't just be the good retail politician. You're going to have that other component. And maybe 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, you know, back when it was George Wallace and Big Jim Folsom and guys like that, you could get away with not raising a bunch of campaign money, but just be good and go to all the courthouses or go to all the meetings, the Kiwanis Club, the Rotary Club, the Republican Party meetings, and do really well. I think this is a show that you got to have something extra in the tank. You've got to be able to go and say, hey, can you cut me a check? You got to go. And the thing is, you know, for better or for worse, you're going to have to play nice with people in Washington.
Yeah.
to get that money, because that's where a lot of the money is now. That's why some of these guys that are still playing right now in this game for this U.S. Senate seat, at least the Republican nomination, they have the money to do so, and I think that is where he never really gained any traction.
And how different was this campaign run for John Merrill than past campaigns he's run in the past? You talked about how things have changed politically in the nation. Did he act differently this time, would you say?
I think so, and he will deny this, but, you know, during the campaign, he was during the nappies, where the nappies were here. He does the nappies on Friday night. The next day, and I didn't go to the nappies, I show up at a meeting, a Republican on a quarterly meeting in Coleman, Alabama, at about 10 a.m., and he has done the both and gone the whole way.
Yeah.
And he found himself, and this, I had him on the show yesterday, on my show yesterday, and he said that was the thing, was, you know, he usually would never turn down an invite, and he found himself having to turn down invites. Mm. He would wake up in the morning and see five things on the schedule. You know something else he does? He is the public address announcer at Hillcrest High School in Tuscaloosa.
Really?
For the football games. So he's having to, like, kind of give up some of the things he always does.
Yeah.
And he says that he wasn't really ready for, you know, all the invitations and everything that comes along with running for an office of this magnitude. Now, he's running for Secretary of State, down ballot race, a little bit different, particularly in this last cycle in 2018. He didn't have a primary opponent, and then he just steamrolled his Democratic opposition.
Now, that's a hometown guy that's still calling games on the PA system at the local high school, but running for a federal office. And the names he's competing against, or was competing against, before Sessions jumped in, Tuberville and Byrne, and, of course, there's other people running too. But how did his name ID, do you think, stack up to some of these other competitors while he was still in the race?
I mean, he very well may be running neck and neck with Bradley Byrne on name ID.
Okay.
Bradley Byrne, the thing that sets him apart was his ability to just put money in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that comes with being a sitting member of the United States Congress, right? You do have all those connections. That was probably the difference. I would say, though, he's, you know, Roy Moore still in this race. Name ID, high name ID. Just got
of
really
course.
High.
Of course, I failed
negatives
to mention Roy Moore. Can't believe that.
Right. Tommy Tuberville's living and dining off of his name ID right now. He's not raising a whole lot of money.
Hmm.
He's have to put his own money into it. I still think right now, if the election's tomorrow, it's a Tommy Tuberville, Jeff Sessions runoff. But, you know, some of these polls out there that show Jeff Sessions in the mid to high 30s, he is essentially the incumbent. You know,
right.
He was for 20 years U.S. Senator and then goes to be Attorney General. He is essentially the incumbent in this election. If you're the incumbent, and now he's not the absolute true definition of an incumbent, but if you're an incumbent and you're that far below 50%, you're in trouble. It tells you that there's enough people willing to vote for an alternative out there that's not you. And, you know, while he is the front runner, what happens when you start seeing some of these candidates go away, when Roy Moore finally goes away, when Bradley Byrne, if it's not Bradley Byrne, or whatever, if it's Tuberville that goes away, or when we get down to two candidates, are they going to coalesce behind Jeff Sessions? Is he their number two? Are they going to coalesce behind the other option? And that's the question. We don't really know what everybody's second choice is right mm-hmm. now. Is it Jeff Sessions, or is it something different? So that's what we got to wait and see. But I you know, it's not a slam dunk for Jeff Sessions. So that was the assumption. Oh, he gets in, he's going to wipe out the field. These guys are still playing. They're still in there. It's not like when Marco Rubio, when he was running for president in 2016, remember, he got in that race, loses the Florida primary. Man, they did a weird thing in Florida where they had a presidential primary, then they had the Senate primary like months later.
Right.
He got out of that race, got into the Senate race, cleared the field. Everybody said, we're not going to run against Marco Rubio. That didn't happen with Jeff Sessions this mm-hmm. time. Everybody stuck around.
And I imagine so much of that is because of the rift that developed between he and the president while he was attorney general. If that never happened, well, first off, Sessions would likely still be the attorney general. But if that didn't happen and he happened to be in this race for Senate, I imagine the numbers would be different.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know, though. I think he would probably, you know, last time he ran, what was that, 2014? And he ran no opposition in the Republican primary, obviously, but no opposition in the no opposition in the general election and won with 97% of the vote.
Mm. I want to talk more about the Senate race when we get back and where you think John Merrill's voters will go now that he's out of the Senate race. And also talk some of the congressional races. I know we just recently had the AL1 Republican primary debate, how that stacks up. And I know you've got some information on AL2. And another Democrat presidential candidate drops out, also citing a lack of funding. Kamala Harris now out of the race. We'll get to all that and more, and give us your calls or texts, 251-343-0106. Mobile Mornings rolls on. Hey, 21 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Dalton Orwig and Jeff Poor in studio. Jeff Poor from The Jeff Poor Show, WVNN in Huntsville. Also writer for Lanyap, Breitbart, and Yellowhammer News. And talking about the big Senate race. And a Republican drops out. John Merrill makes the announcement earlier this week that he is ending his campaign for Senate. Of course, he is the sitting Secretary of State. Do you think, Jeff, did that have any role in this decision, his current position in the government?
Maybe. He's always taken heat for that. So when he ran for election in 2018, his Democrat opponents would say, how can you be the state's chief election officer and, you know, run for this position? But that's always been the case. It's always been how we've done it in Alabama. So, you got to have faith in the system, or you got to maybe you'll have the governor appoint the Secretary of State. I don't know what the correct answer to that is, but he did say something that's interesting, so everybody's kind of wondering, where are all Merrill's votes going to go?
Yes, that was my next question.
He told me, I asked him as soon as he made his statements, like, are you going to endorse? And he said it wouldn't be appropriate because of his role as Secretary of State. He said, when you're running as Secretary of State, everybody knows who you're for yourself, but he thinks that there's maybe it would cross the line perhaps to actually endorse a candidate. I would fully expect him to endorse the Republican against Doug Jones, but I wouldn't expect him to get involved in the primary process.
We're seeing this week Congressman Bradley Byrne releases his first television ad. I know Roy Moore just put out a new TV ad. As far as the media blitz, what are we looking at here? It's a long campaign season. It'll be here before we know it, the primary in March, but when do you expect them to really start, and I'm talking them as in the Senate candidates, when do you expect them to start really spending money and putting their name out on TV and radio constantly?
I thought Bradley Byrne should have done it long ago. Now, we all know him down here in coastal Alabama. North Alabama is where he's really focused getting his name out there. And I thought they waited way too late. I cannot believe they waited as long as they did. They finally got up on air. They have a lot of upside. You know, they can build, you could carpet bomb the Birmingham airwaves, and that helps a lot. The Birmingham market's much different than anywhere in the state. It includes here at Huntsville, much different than even Montgomery in some ways. But Birmingham is such a big media market. It goes from Choctaw County all the way north to Cherokee County. And think about that kind of diagonally there, I-20, and then as it crosses into Mississippi, and then I-59 as it heads on up into Georgia. That's the Birmingham market.
Huge.
You could do a lot with the Birmingham market because it's so big. If you're on the TV stations there, then you're touching a lot more people. You're hitting Gadsden, you're hitting Anniston, hitting Tuscaloosa. Those are all big population centers. With the other parts of the state, it's a little bit different. You really got to get on the ground. Mm. You can't rely on the media, particularly in the Wiregrass. The Wiregrass is a weird place because you have the Dothan media market, which really, you know, you got a couple of TV stations there. They don't really do TV news. You know how, you know, those of you who are TV news know that there's a lot of cutbacks in this business. So one of the stations, they just simulcast the Montgomery news.
Huh.
And then the other station there, they have news. That's where you want to be. But most people, the best way to get your name out there is through the direct mail. You're sending out the flyers. You're getting the little inserts in the newspapers or whatever. That's the best way to do it. It's funny because people think of Alabama as kind of a monolith, but the state has all its little intricacies and different ways that you win an election in this state.
And no one knows the different intricacies around the state better than you. You've traveled and hit every county, right? You're talking about I feel like maybe last year you were writing an article from a different county every single week. So you know how the voters respond to things in different parts of these states.
Mostly, I have hit all 67 counties. Last year was the goal to get to all 67 courthouses.
Oh, very nice.
So I accomplished that goal, but you understand how different the different parts of the state. The West Alabama is a little more different because it's the minority counties, the Black Belt. You know, we don't talk that much about Republican votes, but there's a few votes out there. Mm-hmm. You know, you shouldn't totally dismiss it, but if you're looking at it from a Democratic campaign, that's where you really got to. You know, you got to gin up the turnout. You got to look at Selma. You got to look at parts of Birmingham and Tuscaloosa. You got to look at parts of Mobile if you're Doug Jones. That is where you need to spend your money. So, I mean, you know, different campaigns, they know where their voters are.
Speaking of Doug Jones, how do you think he plans to approach this election? He will take on whoever comes out of this Republican primary and the likely runoff, according to most people, including you, who thinks this will be a runoff for the Republican slot. How do you think Doug Jones approaches this race?
He's going to have a lot of money. This is not going to be, you know, token opposition. You know, just a Democrat that qualifies, gets on the ballot, and then just hangs out. He is an incumbent, so people, by virtue of him being an incumbent, will just write him checks because he still has votes. And he's going to be one of the, I think, the most formidable Democrat opponents that Republicans have faced probably since Siegelman, since Jim Folsom Jr. This is going to be not a layup. It should be easy with Donald Trump on the ballot. Now that you talk to Doug Jones' supporters and his folks, and they'll tell you, well, they're hoping for disaster for Trump.
Right.
They're hoping impeachment goes badly. They don't want to run against Trump. They just want to demoralize the Republican base enough to stay home, try to build something out of that, get turned up, you know, and then hopefully people don't just go straight ticket. But that's the problem if you're Doug Jones. People aren't going to go down the ballot. They're just going to mark Republican or Democrat.
And speaking of Trump, so far the leading four Republican candidates for Senate, Sessions, Moore, Byrne, Tuberville, they're all, you know, toeing the party line. They've got similar ads out, and a lot of them, well, all four of them backing Trump and his policies. I don't expect any of them to go against Trump, but when do you think we'll start to see maybe one try to differentiate himself a little bit so that they're not running the same campaign as the other candidates?
Or will we see them on the stage together? I mean, that's a bigger question.
Yeah.
And, you know, running Trump, I think the thing I think about this, I think it's such a lazy approach for Republican candidates. I think they're listening to people in Washington, D.C. You don't want to oppose Trump. But you don't want to be, you know, that's the one thing Jeff Sessions roll out. You know, we know the history. Everybody knows the history between Jeff Sessions and Donald Trump at this point, right?
Yeah.
But you see that, and doesn't it make you cringe after knowing what you know about Jeff Sessions and Donald Trump and the way he just denigrated him, just insulted him, to see Jeff Sessions talk the way he did? But I think there's this notion, and I don't think it's true, that you've got to be the Trumpiest of all. If that were the case, Luther Strange would be your United States Senator right now.
He would be. But how Sessions couldn't, he can't run it any other way, right? He can't go against Trump. He can't say, I can't believe he treated me the way he did.
No, but you don't have to go groveling. And I thought that first ad was a little grovelly. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I don't know how people react to that. If they know what they know about the way he treated him, you don't have to go guns a-blaring and just go after Donald Trump. I would think that would be a total mistake. But don't go talking about, don't you know, diminish yourself to the point where you're just doing this to get your vote because, you know, I'm still sticking with this guy. I think people in Alabama particularly look at and they say, I like a guy with a little bit of a backbone, that he is for Trump because immigration, because trade, because foreign policy, not because of the cult of Donald Trump.
All right, when we come back, I want to talk about the local race, the race for the AL1 congressional seat, and In the recent poll, end of November, Bill Hightower leading with 35% of the vote. I'm not sure if things have changed since then. I want to talk about that when we get back. Also, AL2, and get into some national politics as well. Trump overseas in London for the NATO summit. But while he's away, Congress is playing, and impeachment inquiry moves into the House Judiciary Committee. All that and more coming up on Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5 Dalton Orwig with Jeff Poore. Thanks, Kane. 8:37 on FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Right now, it's time to head to McConnell Automotive and talk to Louis Arata. Hey, Louis.
Good morning, everybody.
Morning. So, some good news just came down to McConnell Automotive. General Motors, I don't know if they email you or they call you, but they let you know the good news. So, why don't you let everyone out there know what's going on at McConnell?
Yeah, most of all GM products we have in stock is employee pricing.
Wow.
Which is absolutely wonderful, especially in December. You know, we want to get rid of some stuff, and General Motors is putting some money out there. And also, I haven't mentioned it lately, but if you're a member of Costco, mm-hmm. General Motors is giving you some extra money on that, too. So we've got a big selection of new Sierras from the three-quarter tons all the way down to the good-looking Canyon. Also have the Buick, don't forget about the Enclave, Envision, the Encore, and don't forget about our used cars. We got a great selection of those. Check us out online at McConnellAutomotive.com or give us a call at 251-476-4141.
All right. Thank you, Louis.
Thank you.
That's Louis Arata. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street just east of I-65 and online, McConnellAutomotive.com. 8:38 FM Talk 106.5. Dalton Orwig here with Jeff Poore from the Jeff Poore Show, WVNN in Huntsville. Also read his writings at Lanyap, Breitbart, and YellowhammerNews.com. And Sean Sullivan taking a couple days off. He'll be back later this week. And it's a good thing, too, because we're on the road a lot. Today, I'll be live Midday Mobile at noon from the fantail of the USS Alabama, followed by the Scuttlebutt Network boys, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. They take the mic from me at 1 p.m. unless they force it from my hand earlier. I don't want to get into it with those two Marines. Also, tomorrow night, the Fairhope Brewing Company, 12 Bartenders of Christmas. Tips and donations go to Wilmer Hall Children's Home. Let Sean, Kelly, and myself pour you a beer tomorrow night. And on Friday, Midday Mobile Live, noon to 2 at your CBD store of West Mobile, a Christmas open house and giving away a CBD SunMed relief bundle valued at over $240. So, Jeff, we've been talking a lot about the Senate race, but, of course, a lot more races will be on the ballot for primary and general election. And we had the AL1 Republican primary congressional debate just about 2 weeks ago, held it there in Chickasaw. I thought that the debate went really well, had all the candidates up there on the stage. You were there checking it out. We aired it online and on the station, FM Talk 106.5. But a poll came out. I can't remember if this poll was previous to or after that. Actually, this must have been after the debate. The poll came out, and you wrote about it. But Bill Hightower leading in that poll with 35%, followed by Chris Pringle at 16%, Jerry Carl polling at 13%, Wes Lambert 2%, Castorani 1%, and then the most important number, 33% undecided.
Yeah.
Let me turn you on there. There we go.
I think they went to the field before this poll was conducted, okay, and it was released after the debate. It's a Club for Growth poll. Club for Growth is a supporter of Senator Hightower's. So, take that into account. The WPA research or WPA intelligence is a pretty good polling firm that did it for Club for Growth. But just keep in mind, the people who commissioned the poll, they have a dog in the fight. Right now, it's the only polling I have seen is showing Hightower out front. What I'm really surprised with is Jerry Carl not getting more traction. Here's a weird thing about this race, Dalton. In all these AL1 races, well, there's only been a few. When Sonny Callahan retired and then Joe Bonner won, and then when you had Joe Bonner go work at the University of Alabama, and then, you had that crazy field, you've always had a Baldwin County guy.
Mm.
Now, I know John Castorani's from Fairhope, I think, but you don't have a strong Baldwin County Trip Pittman kind of guy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you have three Mobile guys really battling it out. And I wonder, that opens up a whole new swath of territory for these guys. Don't get me wrong. but you don't have the tribalism that you might normally see in an AL1 contest.
As far as this campaign goes, we mentioned earlier that politics have changed, and they're always changing, but the way you run a race has changed when you're running to win. And obviously the difference in land that they have to travel for a Senate race compared to a congressional race is majorly different. But how else does a should a campaign for Congress be ran differently than a campaign for a Senate seat?
It's more touches. You can't just buy your way a seat. Money in a statewide race, I think money is much more important. We talked about the Birmingham market. Mobile market's different. And keep in mind, half the Mobile market's in Florida, and there's some portions in Mississippi.
Right.
You're playing ads for Destin, Florida. That doesn't get you anywhere. You got to really hyper-focus locally, and it's, what, five counties? It's Mobile, Baldwin, Escambia, Monroe, parts of Clark.
Mm-hmm.
So that, yeah.
It covers a pretty big part of Southwest Alabama. And that number in that last poll, 33% undecided, what are those people? I know it's early, relatively early in the campaign, although I've said it before, March will be here before we know it. And we'll start to hear more ads here, and we'll see more ads on TV. But the 33% that are undecided, what do you think will sway them? What do you think they want to hear from these guys?
I think right now it's a name ID race. That, you know, somebody needs to make a big splash. You don't have somebody that stands out. Because these are guys, they are known in their local districts, but maybe not, you know. What is somebody in Brewton going to know about the District 3 County Commissioner in Mobile? You know, or what are they going to know about Representative Pringle? So those are the, you know, I think what you got to do to get that chip away at that 33% is get that name ID up in Washington County and get that name ID up in parts of South Baldwin County. Probably is where you really, really ought to be looking, because there's a lot of folks down there, Foley, Orange Beach, Gulf Shores. Probably that's where you really should spend time if you're any of these candidates, I would think, because a lot of people have their minds made up maybe in Mobile. But that's how you get those undecideds. You'll find the undecideds, and I think the reason you have so many undecideds is because no one's heard of these guys. So where have they not heard of these guys? Well, you go look for those places.
Mm-hmm. Just a reminder on our website, if you missed the Republican debate, we've got that listed. There's a tab at the top of the page, 2020 elections, and the podcast is right there on that page. You can listen to it. Also, Sean Sullivan on Midday Mobile interviewed each of the candidates for the Republican primary previous to the debate, and those are all listed on the site as well. Another congressional race, AL2. I don't know a whole lot about that race. Fill me in on what's happening there generally.
So the second congressional district is from Prattville, just north of Montgomery. It's Autauga County and Wetumpka, Elmore County, most of Montgomery. Some of Montgomery is in Mike Rogers' 3rd Congressional District, and some of it's in Terry Sewell's 7th, but most of Montgomery is AL2. And then think of it going all the way to the southeastern corner of the state, all the way to Dothan. Now, after the next census, probably not going to look that way anymore. But for now, that's what you're dealing with. You have an interesting candidate in that race, Troy King, perhaps you've heard of, a former mm-hmm. attorney general. Seems to be the front runner, but not doing much right now. They polled it, and he was just dominating over everybody, because Martha Roby is retiring. She's not running again, so it's a wide-open race. I think she would have won again if she had ran, but she's not. So Troy King, the one place where he beat Steve Marshall in 2018 was in that congressional district. He got trounced everywhere else, but he was strong in Montgomery South.
Mm-hmm.
So he right now is the guy, but he hasn't really been doing much. The guy that has just been relentless, he is running this like I think these Senate candidates ought to be running it, is Jeff Coleman. He is a Dothan businessman, owns a movie company. If you drive from the Florida state line on 231, if you're coming back from Panama City, you go all the way to Montgomery, it is blanketed with Jeff Coleman everywhere. I was at the Iron Bowl, saw Tommy Tuberville's tailgate. That was the only political sign I saw until afterwards, and then you start seeing Jeff Coleman signs. And that's not even his district.
Oh, wow.
The guy has a falling. He is spending tons and tons of his own money. He doesn't have to worry about fundraising. He's really making the most inroads. And then I would say there's one other candidate, Jessica Taylor.
Okay.
She is the, if you recall, she did the basketball ad that roll out. Was on Fox a few times. You saw her throwing the ball behind her head and sinking the shot. She went to Weaver High School, played on the state championship team there. I remember when that was like the powerhouse. But she's kind of making a splash. I expect something from her. Just waiting to see if Troy King gets involved. And then there's former Representative Barry Moore, who also has a name ID around Enterprise of Coffee County.
So right now, would you say it's looking maybe like a runoff between Coleman and King?
I would say so. And here's the thing about these runoffs, particularly here in AL1 and AL2. No Trump on the ballot. What does that do to turnout? And then you're going to have that runoff in that Senate race. That's going to force these Senate candidates to spend time in the lower half of the state, I think.
Yeah, Trump on the ballot, that is a huge deal for these candidates. And I agree, it'll be really interesting to see. Actually, the whole election season from our little races down here all the way up to the big presidential race should be interesting to watch over the next few months. And a Democratic candidate dropping out, Kamala Harris, says she doesn't have the money to continue. Trump dealing with the impeachment inquiry while he's overseas at the NATO summit. We'll talk some national politics when we get back here on Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5. FM Talk 106.5. I'm Dalton Orwig, and this segment of Mobile Mornings brought to you by our friends at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Local company ran by Trey Bennett and his crew at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. They'll do the work in both Mobile and Baldwin counties. And if you have a bunch of junk, don't know where to take that junk, if you can't physically move it, I know a lot of us have some real heavy stuff around the house that we just don't feel like moving, or if it's junk that you know you aren't supposed to throw in the dumpster, the crew at 1-800-GOT-JUNK have got you covered. And I harp on this because I've dealt with some companies in the past that aren't like 1-800-GOT-JUNK. You call Trey and the crew, you make your appointment, and they show up right on time. They don't give you one of those big windows where you have to take half a day off and they may or may not show up. You make your appointment, they show up then. And also, the price you get quoted is the price you'll pay. 1-800-GOT-JUNK, a great locally owned company. Everyone I know that's used 1-800-GOT-JUNK has nothing but glowing reviews, including just about everyone here at FM Talk 106.5. So once again, to get a quote, set up your appointment, call 1-800-GOT-JUNK or go to 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. Jeff, I'm sitting in with Jeff Poor, or Jeff Poor sitting in with me, host of the Jeff Poor Show, WVNN in Huntsville, also writes for Lanyap, Breitbart, and Yellowhammer News. And nationally, it's the same big story that we've been talking about for months now, and that's the impeachment inquiry into the president. And things have moved after the committees took a break over Thanksgiving week, and we did see the hearings through the House Intelligence Committee, and now they're passing the baton over to the House Judiciary Committee. And yesterday, Monday, the Republicans issued their own report concerning the Democrats' impeachment case, and they've plan and have been arguing that the president should not be impeached because there's no evidence that his actions were done specifically to benefit the 2020 election. That's what the Republicans have been saying recently, and they released this 123-page report on Monday. Then yesterday, the House Intelligence Committee releases a 300-page report laying out their case for impeachment. Now Nadler gets the reins in the House Judiciary Committee, and Republicans are saying he's already running a shady deal here. What do you think happens from here? I know they have their first hearings today.
Yeah, they have some constitutional law scholars coming in and going to talk about why impeachment is constitutional at this point. We know it's just a show, whatever. They're going to say what they need them to say. We're probably about a little over a week away from an actual vote on the House floor, I think, for articles of impeachment. Really, right, what the Judiciary Committee is going to do, they're going to take this report from the Intel Committee, and they craft the articles of impeachment. Mm. And then they, you know, they debate them, and then they go through the markup process just like you would any other bill. Then you have the articles, and then they go to the House floor. What I think is going to be the most interesting thing, this is what you guys need to watch, what Democrats defect and vote no on some of these articles.
Mm.
Watch those Democrats. Watch who they are. Pay close attention to who they are. Those are, could they be one of the 31 members of Congress that won in districts that Trump carried in 16? They are. Does this even make it this far, though? There's been some rumblings, been some trial balloons, I think, about not doing impeachment at all. and just going with a censure resolution,
mm-hmm.
a slap on the wrist, what is it, like a contempt of Congress or something like that, yeah, you know, just to stay face with some of these, for some of these members that are vulnerable in these swing districts. I think the Democrats are way too far gone. They've gone way too far out on this. They can't back off an impeachment now. We've heard from day one since he was inaugurated, this is the worst human being on the face of the planet in human history. If you're going to make him out to be that, then you got to have a certain constituency within the Democratic Party that is expecting an impeachment. It is expecting a Nancy Pelosi-led majority to do something about this awful human being. I think that's where they're at. I don't think we're going to see a censure resolution, but there is some talk about that. But what you need to watch is what Democrats defect and vote against an impeachment resolution, or these, what articles of impeachment actually make it through.
I'm sure the Democrats had hoped at this point that they would have made some Republicans jump ship, and that really hasn't happened.
That's not happened.
There's been, you know, unnamed, anonymous Republicans in some reports that say, oh, I can't believe the president did this, blah, 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 but not publicly, because that would be a for their political current political careers, maybe not down the road, but that would be a death sentence right now to go against Trump if you're a Republican. You said they're too far gone now to not vote for impeachment, but let's say they don't take it to a vote and they do just censure the president. That makes him look even weaker, right, at this point.
It does a few things. It makes them look weaker, but I think it makes these some of these members vulnerable to primary challenges on their left. So look what happened. How did Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez become a member of Congress? She ran against Joe Crowley, who had been the chairman of the House Progressive Caucus. He is the Democrats' Democrat, a liberal guy from New York City, gets challenged on his left, loses that seat. You got to see a lot more Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's if they don't go through with impeachment, because they'll challenge him on the left. That's the fear. That's why Jerry Nadler is so hell-bent on impeachment, I think, because across town, he saw what happened to Joe Crowley. He knows the political temperature in New York City right now, and he can get challenged on his left. And this is a guy that's been in Congress forever. He loses everything. But more importantly, Nancy Pelosi loses a bunch of her loyal lieutenants to these kinds of challenges. That's why they are forced to go ahead with impeachment.
And really quickly, we have 1 minute left, but I wanted to get your take on Kamala Harris dropping out. Says she doesn't have the money to finish the campaign. We saw the return of creepy Joe Biden nibbling on his wife's finger. Who do you have right now, if you had to guess, who do you think will win the Democrat nomination?
You still... reluctantly, I say Joe Biden, because I just, no one is setting themselves apart. That Cory Booker said something interesting in morning, just morning, that there are more billionaires up on the Democrat presidential stage than there are black people. And,
wow.
And that's true. You know, there's Tom Steyer and there's now Michael Bloomberg. Think about that. So that's a problem. And where did they lose in 2016? They didn't get the urban vote out in Michigan and Pennsylvania. That is something they need to deal with.
All right. Thanks for coming in, Jeff. And where can folks find you online?
Twitter.com/Jeff_4.
And, of course, the Jeff Poor Show on WVNN in Huntsville. Come out today, noon, Midday Mobile live from the fantail of the USS Alabama. Mike Gallagher Show on the way next.